The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Tonight, this year's Eurovision Song Contest winner will be crowned in Vienna, but Irish viewers will not be watching on RTE, although many may watch on BBC. But RTE's decision to boycott the competition because of Israel's participation has been welcomed by many. So it seems the spirit of the boycott is alive and well. But what role does not doing something have in today's world? I'm joined in studio by Ciara Moriarty, Enterprise postdoctoral fellow working at UCD and at the National Library of Ireland. Claire, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, just about.
23 minutes to 12. So let's talk about boycotts and the history of not doing something. It goes back a long way to Captain Boycott gets the name, but the procedure goes back probably further.
Yeah, I think most Irish people at least know that boycotting is a term that comes from an incident in around 1880 in Mayo. So Charles Boycott, Captain Charles Boycott, as he's often called, was the kind of land managing agent of Lord Erne, who was a big landowner down there. And in response to the failure of Boycott to reduce the rents after a bad agricultural year, the locals, instead of going to violence, followed some recent advice from Charles Stuart Parnell, which was that to use shunning and sort of broad spectrum ostracizing to kind of make a person feel the wrong that they've done.
So that's
the name. Well, it was very effective. One of the really interesting things is how heavily covered it was in the British press. So the National Library has this great collection of sketchings of, you know, an artist who was sent over to cover this tragedy, I suppose, as they saw it. And one of the really interesting things they report is the role of women in this. So they say, you know, he's safe from violence here, Boycott, but there's not a woman that will make him a loaf or wash his cravat. So you have this kind of interesting sense of which, you know, they thought it was a powerful political move.
Now, so the term dates from then, but the actual process goes back further. You have some examples.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we know, shunning is as old as time, probably. But one of my favourite examples was, so I just came across this in the National Library yesterday, a poem by a 17-year-old Quaker woman living in Dublin. So she wrote and published a poem on the African slave trade in 1792. So almost 100 years before anything to do with boycott. So this, it's an anti-slavery poem. So she makes the case against slavery in a sort of very poetic format. But the main recommendation that emerges is that she's urging especially Irish and probably Anglo-Irish women to stop taking luxury goods or stop allowing your personal commerce to in any way be funding slavery. So off the back of this, it's a recommendation to not take sugar in your tea. And reportedly off the back of this and various other recommendations against sugar, hundreds of thousands of people stopped buying sugar.
So sugar was produced by slaves.
Yeah. That's
and therefore it was an anti-slavery thing to not use sugar. Forward to the early 20th century and Cumann na mBan. What did they do?
Yeah. So there's the sort of better known Belfast boycott, which I think is just in the run up to the Civil War, a sort of huge embargo or boycott of any sort of trading with English goods. But what was interesting, I think, from some of the posters you find from Cumann na mBan in the National Library was the targeting of women's, what we might think of a kind of domestic or frivolous spending. So not to buy sweets and chocolate particularly. The phrase from that slogan says, every English sweet you eat deprives an Irish mouth of meat. So this kind of idea that women are not always targeted as these important economic agents, but that there is a lot that they can do, ditto for their personal company. So another thing that comes out in these posters is don't give your intercourse, I think intended in the innocent sense here, or your company or attention to English soldiers living around. You know, that's another power you have to withdraw yourself from people.
Now, some of the boycotts that we are familiar with, the Dunn Stores, South African boycott at where the sales assistants refused to process at the till these fruits. Did that actually have an effect? I know Nelson Mandela thanked them personally for the effect of that intervention, but was that alone very effective or did it depend on the sporting boycott and everything else that came with it?
Well, I think cause and effect is a hard thing to determine, but one of the things that's really important about boycotts is how they can represent an alternative to more traditional political engineering. Do you know? So we might look at something like it's Mary Manning, I think was her name, the 21-year-old in Henry Street Dunn's, who refused to handle the grapefruit as an unusual beginning of something that might snowball. But at a time when I think many people in Ireland were calling for a sort of official embargo on trade with South Africa, it does seem like you can sort of draw a line from her initial activity, then the 11 people eventually striking for 3 years. And, you know, eventually there was a national ban.
Now, what about the argument that sport is sport, it should be kept separate from politics? Songs and music are songs and music. They should be kept separate from politics. I mean, we are familiar with the term sports washing, yeah, where unsavory things can be, I suppose, sanitized through sport. We have, I suppose, tonight's song washing.
Or pink washing. So often, at least in its recent instantiation, the Eurovision is very associated with LGBTQ plus values and queer joy. So a lot of people think that one of the reasons that the Israeli leadership have put so much energy and effort into Eurovision is that it is a kind of soft power tool with which you can, you know, rehabilitate the reputation of a country that's faced a lot of scrutiny. So I think if your opinion is that sports and culture are political, it must be nice. I mean, I don't know any people who really are involved in these things that can regard it that way because of how much public funding they depend on, because of on the global stage, how they bring different nations together. They just seem inherently political to me.
Now, there's one particular boycott I remember that was very effective back in the late 80s, where in America there was a scandal about dolphins being caught up in the nets catching tuna. And of course, America's very big on their tuna. And the kids were saying, we're not eating tuna because they're killing the dolphins. And that led to a very effective, safe tuna brand, you know, that you had to have the label that it wasn't killing dolphins or you wouldn't sell your tuna.
Brilliant. And I think that's a good example as well of having a boycott with a good target in mind. So sometimes the movements around boycotting can be criticised for not having a specific enough agenda in mind. But something like that, where the goal is to get a new safety standard in place, it seems a really clear example of a benefit.
Now, the question of whether you can afford to boycott something, I mean, you make the point if a particular retailer has a reputation for using sweatshops or whatever, but they're very low cost to the consumer retailer, can you boycott them if you can't afford to boycott them? Do you know what I mean? If you can shop in BT's, great, fine, you can boycott anybody. But if you have to shop in another place that's cheap.
Yeah, I think we all as people need to be sensitive to the different abilities of people to participate in different kinds of activities. So yes, it'd be easy to boycott Pennies when you can afford more expensive places than Pennies. I think as James Baldwin, the author said, there's nothing so expensive as being poor. You know, cheap stuff doesn't last. You need to replace it quickly. Similarly, like, it's very easy for me to boycott Tesla because I couldn't afford a Tesla anyway. Yeah. So it's sort of vacuously satisfied. So I think we need to be sensitive to that kind of thing. But also, not doing something is sometimes easier than doing something, if you know what I mean. So if I remember writing this image piece about boycotting at a time where I had a lot of friends with young babies like me who were not feeling right, able to get out and protest necessarily. But remembering that, you know, consuming ethically and that type of thing is something you can do, even if you can't be on the front line of political activity.
You mentioned James Baldwin. Interesting, on the TED Hour this morning on News Talk, there was a woman talking about a book she had written about three mothers, Malcolm X's mother, Martin Luther King's mother and James Baldwin's mother. So I think that's repeated. Well worth a listen to that TED Hour. Now, the question of the boycott on the song contest tonight, will that have any effect long term?
Again, I just think it's always hard to know, but I think when we try and evaluate whether something's a good thing to do or not, we can think about it intrinsically. So in itself, is it a good or a bad thing to do? And I think there it's clear a lot of people in Ireland don't want to participate in this exercise of soft power rehabilitation that I think the Eurovision might represent to people defending the Israeli agenda. Then in terms of instrumental stuff, will it make an impact? I think it's always hard to tell at the beginning of something whether it will or not. So I suppose we just have to be helpful that these kind of shows of bravery will be replicated and maybe copied by government in enacting some serious political stuff.
No, who knows? Back in the Olympics in Moscow, boycotted by the United States, then the Olympics in LA, boycotted by Russia. I mean, was that pure politics rather than anything else? I mean, if you won a record in LA and the Russians weren't there, you might be able to say, well, I am the fastest person in the world because the Russians would have been drugged up anyway. But if you won something in Moscow and the Americans weren't there, could you really say you're the fastest man or woman in the world?
Hard to say. I mean, are you even the fastest person on earth when you win the Olympics? Because how many poor people don't get an opportunity to ever get a coach or a trainer? Do you know, sure. I often think this, for every gold medal, there's probably somebody else that missed a chance there. But I was interested to learn that one of the key cases of Ireland boycotting the Olympics wasn't on political grounds. Mm. It was something to do with the rules change in cycling. So sometimes it's not political at all.
Some of the comments coming in, constantly trying to boycott something or other is so negative. Sport and music transcend politics and can be used as a voice for good and inclusiveness. Ireland seems to have it in for Israel. By this token, surely you should be boycotting USA for attacking Iran. And that is a question of consistency, isn't it? Who do you decide to boycott? What do you decide to boycott?
I mean, I think people should feel very comfortable in trying to minimise their support of American behaviour at the time. So I think there's that point, but there's also not letting perfect consistency get in the way of improvement. So don't let perfect be the enemy of better.
The Irish don't do principle boycotting very well. When Musk did his Nazi salute, sales of Tesla plummeted in Europe but rose in Ireland. I think that might have been because of the price drop.
It's a tricky one, because I think initially people bought Teslas to show that they were good about the environment, and then there was this kind of transformation of that brand. So it's, I think,
the activities of Doge and all of that, throwing people willfully out of jobs that they were doing perfectly well. Boycotting is childish, says another. Virtue signalling and performative, and doesn't make any difference. And that's the question, does it make any difference?
But there's so many instances of it clearly making a difference that I think that's a non-starter. But I think it's also worth, like, why is virtue signalling a bad thing? It's not a bad thing to broadcast good views. So I think we should be spurious of people who think that any sense of demonstrating that you're acting well is some sort of spurious thing, you know, that deserves to be challenged too.
Well, interesting topic. Claire Moriarty, Enterprise Postdoctoral Fellow working at UCD and the National Library of Ireland. Claire, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.